make Star Wars such a huge success was just simply the acting. I mean, can I come with you in your starship? Like, the acting in that is brilliant, isn't it? Well, as Molly said, I'm Greg, and been hanging out here around Crossroads for, I guess, a little over 4 years now. And been serving with students back in student ministry, which has been great. I'm currently, like, taking a year off. It's been a lot of years that I've been doing that kind of thing, and so I'm kind of in this period where I'm taking a year off. And it's great, though. Other times that I'm kind of serving, sometimes I do announcements up here. And the Super Bowl service is a time that I get to wear these really awful, tight referee pants and get to be the ref up here. And just want to let you know, at the end of the service, if you're, like, dying to take over that job, I'll be glad to give it up this year. So if you want to do that, go for it. But that moment for Anakin seemed to be kind of a defining moment. As she said, you know, Anakin, this path has been laid before you. And that path for him, he had a single-minded focus of what he was going to grow into. He was going to grow into a Jedi Knight. It was very clear from the very beginning. Well, for me at that age, there was a path that was laid before me as well of what I was going to grow into. And for me, I was going to grow into a professional baseball player. That was it for me. From about that age, actually age 4 when I started T-ball, that path was laid before me, because at that early age, there was this distinction between myself and my peers, I guess you would say. You know, I wasn't really out there about, you know, picking dandelions and, you know, stomping on anthills and, you know, playing in the dirt and, hey, you know, just out there, you know, how kids are that age. I was actually interested in the game, and for some reason I was able to excel way beyond the, you know, the anthill thing. And, I hit, you know, junior high, and that's when it was like my course was really set. This was it, because there was something about, I guess, just some kind of weird ability that I had to throw a ball and hit it and whatever, run. And so that was my focus. This was my goal. And so everything in my life revolved around becoming a professional baseball player. And so as I got through high school, letters started coming from colleges, and that was pretty exciting. And got a letter from University of Kentucky, and so I end up at Kentucky playing baseball, and that's when everything kind of changed. I mean, that game in college is a little bit faster. Everybody's a little bit better. And so after 2 years, I wasn't getting the amount of playing time that I really knew that I needed to be seen by scouts, so I transferred to Morehead State. And at Morehead State, after about, you know, my first season went really well, my last season, there was a murmuring among scouts like, hey, maybe this guy's got something. And so I was just, you know, like a year away from becoming what I had set, you know, 21, 22 years of my life to do. So halfway through the season, I'm leading the conference and hitting and feeling good about things. And the night before, we played Kentucky, which, believe me, I wanted to get back at them. This is my opportunity to show them, I can't believe you didn't play me like I should have been played. You know, I kind of had an attitude, probably not a great attitude. So the night before that, I go out to Walmart, because in Morehead, Kentucky, Walmart is the place to be. You get dressed up to go to Walmart. Everybody's there. It's the social place to be. It's not like Dollar General, like where you can dress down a little bit. At Walmart, you dress way up. And so I'm at Walmart, and, you know, being in Kentucky, you know, for 4 years, it had kind of like turned me into kind of like a country music fan, which was scary. So I find myself browsing the music aisle, looking at cassettes, because 11 years ago, you know, we didn't have MP3s and all that kind of thing. So I'm looking at the cassette tapes, and I see a Vince Gill tape, and I'm like, Vince Gill rocks. He's awesome. So I pick up a Vince Gill tape and take it back to my dorm room, and I realize they didn't take the plastic guard off of this thing. So that's kind of a bummer. So I get out the scissors, and this stuff is thick. And so I'm cutting through this, and right when I cut through it, it just keeps going and kind of cuts my middle finger. And it was, I'd show it to you, but it'd be bad to do in church. It was kind of, I'll do it this way, how's that? Kind of cut right there, pretty deep. It cut the nerve and down to the bone. This is the night before I got to play Kentucky. What a bummer that was. So I go to the hospital, they stitch me up. That whole deal. But for me, that was it, because it made it pretty hard to take the impact of, you know, hitting a ball And especially when you get it in on the fist, and, you know, catching was like, that's right where the ball hits. And that pain was, still hurts today, you know, after, what, 11 years or whatever. Sometimes it still hurts. But for me, that was kind of the end of this dream that I had to grow into a professional baseball player. And you could say, oh, that's so bad. You know, I'm so sorry. But the reality is, if scouts would have watched me any longer, they would have realized that I carried this little man in my glove often. Whenever a ball would get in there, that little man would just kind of kick it out. You know, it happened all the time. On a baseball team, it's hard to single-handedly lose, you know, a game for your team. But I did that many times. Many times I would just drop a ball, or game over, you know, Greg did it again. I think scouts would have started to pick up on that I just, you know, I'm really not that good. So I think I saved myself a lot of boos and hisses over the years. You know, maybe I could play for the Reds, but I don't know. But 23 years of my life was spent focused on growing into this thing. This is what I was to be. This is what I was going to grow into. And I just wonder, you know, have you ever been told just to grow up? Have you ever thought that about somebody else, maybe the person sitting next to you? You think, I just wish you'd grow up. What a nebulous thing to tell people to grow up. What does that even mean? Well, I think there's different things that we use to measure or mark different moments of growth. Some of those things are things such as responsibility, you know, just taking on more responsibility, or getting a job. Getting your first car, that's a marker for growth. Or getting certain diplomas, getting married, getting the house, putting money away for retirement, growing your portfolio. These are all things that we use to measure growth. And there's also an assumption that with age comes an increase in each of those things, such as the older I get, the more responsibility I take on. Maybe the bigger or the faster, the more luxury kind of car I get, the more square footage I need in my house. And what I put in that square footage has to be better. So there's an assumption that with age comes an increase in all of these things that we use to measure growth in our life. If you've ever wondered kind of the ages of folks that come here to Crossroads, here's how it breaks out a little bit. And you can see that over 60% of us fall in this age group of, you know, like 30 and older. And there's also this assumption that with each kind of phase of life, you can expect a certain amount of growth in each of these markers. You know, like at age 18, you don't expect somebody to own their home and have the car and the job. There's certain markers that kind of increase as we get older. And I'm not saying that any of these markers that we use to define growth are just inherently bad, but let me ask you, is this what we use to define ourselves? Is this what we use to define growth? Is this the path that we've laid before ourselves to say, this is what it's about for me? All that I do and all that I focus in my life of growing into is to grow this stuff. Is that what we use to define our growth? I think for a lot of us, yes. I think for me, that's probably true as well. But Paul, in the book of Ephesians, a bunch of letters that basically were captured in the Bible, written by Paul, in the book of Ephesians, it says this: we're not meant to remain as children, but to grow up in every way into Christ. Paul is redefining what it means to grow. Paul is redefining the path that has been set out for us to say, it's not about achieving or accomplishing or accumulating all of these things. It's about the path towards Christ. Paul is essentially saying, recalibrate your compasses towards Christ to grow in to be like Jesus. Meaning, what amount of love or joy, peace, happiness, you know, these kinds of the qualities of Jesus, those are the things that we ought to be setting our compasses towards, saying, that's what I want to grow into. I think a lot of times when we think about Jesus, we don't think Jesus is really the kind of person that we may really want to be. I mean, especially, you know, love, I think we could all say, yeah, you know, I would like to become a more loving person. The second thing on the list to describe some of the attributes of Jesus is joy. we don't really think of Jesus as this super joyous person to be around. I mean, a lot of the images or the pictures that we get of Jesus are kind of somber and bland and boring. And we think, if I'm going to become like Jesus, man, my life gets boring, doesn't it? That's a bunch of baloney. I think Jesus was probably the most fun person to be around that ever walked the face of this planet. Being around him was what it must have been, always something new and exciting and incredible. And I don't think I've ever really heard a whole lot about his sense of humor. But being kind of the creator of the universe and created our humor, he's probably pretty stinking funny. I'd love to hang out with him just for a week. So Paul is redefining what it means to grow up and what it means to what we're going to grow into. And I know at the end, you know, at the end of my life, someday I'm going to be remembered. And when I'm remembered, I don't want to just be remembered for the fact, oh, I took on a lot of responsibility at work. Or I'm in the process of building a house right now. I don't want people to look back and say, wow, that house that he built, that was something else. Or the fact that he kicked around ground balls all the time. I want people to look back and say, there was something about him that was like Jesus. That's what I want to be defined by. I want to be more like Christ. So, let me just say this as well. By the way, we're talking about growth this morning. And this is the 8:45 service, so I'm assuming that everybody probably woke up. Anybody that I was driving in here today thinking, man, the 8:45 service, these guys are crazy. Like, they must wake up. Their alarm must go off and go, I'm ready to grow. Yes. Come on. Let's go. Let's go to church. I want to grow. Like, it's 8:45, people. You're amazing. But there's something about growth. I just want to point this out, that we don't choose to grow. As Todd was saying earlier, we don't choose to grow to earn or gain a single thing from God. We don't choose to grow to say, maybe God will love me more, or I'll be accepted by God if I choose to grow. I think a lot of times we may do that, because Scripture's real clear on this one. Scripture says, while we were yet still sinful people, while we were messed up, broken, muddy, dirty people, Christ died for us. He died for us in this state, not in the state where we say, okay, I got to get all cleaned up and get my stuff together, and then maybe I can have a relationship with God. Maybe then he'll accept me. I still fall into this pattern all the time. I'll do something, I'll mess up, and I'll think, oh gosh, I got to get right, because why? Christ loved us when we were still broken and sinful people. What an amazing thing. There's so much freedom that can be found in that. So let me just say that this morning to keep that in mind as I encourage you to grow and share my story about how I've experienced growth. We don't do this to earn a single thing from God. There's nothing you can do to get God to love you more or less. Not a single thing. What a great thing that is. I love the way, well, one reason that I do choose to grow, that I have chosen to grow, is because when my life is operating in the way that my Creator designed me to operate, that's when I experience life to its absolute fullest. Because that's how God wired me. That's why I choose to grow. Because I believe that life can be experienced more fully when I'm operating the way the designer made me to function. I love the way one of my favorite speakers and authors, John Ortberg, says this. This is what he says. The outer you is temporary, but the inner you is eternal. It's your being that will never cease to exist. Your spirit, the inner character in the real you, is in the process of becoming something. It may be something unbelievably good or something unimaginably dark, but you are becoming something. And that something is what God sees when he looks at us. And that is what matters most to him. This is, over the past 4 years, has really been a process for me in choosing this of what I'm really becoming. Saying that there's going to be a phase in my life now where I'm going to choose to grow and focus on what I am becoming. And this isn't always a neat and tidy thing. It's not easy. It's not comfortable to choose to grow. But about 4 years ago, I found myself in the midst of a divorce, which was a real bummer. I lost my job, which was kind of an added, and this is all kind of happening at the same time. So the marriage, the job, I was like really broke, like way beyond broke, like thinking about how am I going to pay rent like this next month. But I did have my health, which was a good thing, until the rash. Well, I was working this temp job, and just to kind of scrape by, and this one night I'm sitting here, like right around there at a Wednesday night deal, and I'm just scratching my hand, and I'm like, what's the deal with that? You know, just really itches. And I get home that night, and I see right on my arms, like right this weird mark right here, and exactly the same one right there. And I realized that that day I had like been on the phone at this desk, and I had been typing, and my arms were kind of sitting like this. And that was the exact angle this red mark was. And I, you know, being the brilliant person I am, I kind of did the math. I thought, wow, I saw a cleaning person in there using something. Well, this rash spread. It just like, my arm got swollen and red, and it went up my arm and my chest and my legs, everywhere, my neck, all over the place. And I'm freaking out. And there's a moment, I'll never forget, it was probably about 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm laying in my bed in my apartment, and I, you know, I'm up and down from like soaking myself like in a Aveeno bath, thinking that'll actually do something. I've been to the doctor like 3 times, they're shooting me up with steroids. Didn't do me any good, you know, but, you know, they were trying, at least trying to get rid of the rash. What had happened is really was in my bloodstream, so there's really nothing I could do until I found this random, like, cure. But you can ask me about that later. But this was the first time that I think I had authentically really been angry with God. And I remember that night yelling at God, saying, God, what do you want from me? Do you just take it all? Because it's all gone. You know, I'm not the kind of person that, I guess I'm just not wired to ever think about taking my own life. But there was a part of me that just said, okay, God, if you want to take me, let's go. And I think at that moment in my life, I had inspired more country music songs. You know, the wife, the house, the dog. Car was in bad shape. My health. I mean, how many country music songs could have come out of that? But this was a moment for me when I was just angry with God, thinking this kind of stuff doesn't happen to people like me. It doesn't happen to people like me. I've been basically a good person. And God, I even waited 27 stinking years to have sex, and this is what I get. I mean, I should get some bonus points for that. That wasn't easy. I've been a good person, and this is what you do to me? And there was a moment, laying in bed, in between jumping in and out of baths and without sleep for a few days, because I was itching like crazy, when I just thought, it's like this little voice spoke to me saying, Greg, maybe I'm more concerned with your growth than I am your comfort. And that kind of rocked my theology, this theology that I had constructed around a God that would only offer good things in my life because I had been a pretty good person. There was nothing in my life that would have given any kind of indication that this was coming. Nothing at all. And all of a sudden, this happens. And the theology that I had constructed around this God, that didn't add up. Because there was nothing really apparently wrong. What an American middle class kind of God I had constructed to serve me. And maybe God was more concerned with my growth and becoming like Him than He was making me all comfy cozy. I think I really like to think that comfort is really what God has to offer. When maybe it's more about us becoming like Him, like Paul says. Let's grow up into Christ. And that may not always be comfortable. And that's definitely what I experienced. So over this past, especially couple years, I don't know if you all watch all of these extreme makeover kind of shows. They're so popular. And I know Chuck was talking about these a couple weeks ago. But I just got to tell you, I dig them. I'll admit it. I dig the Extreme Home Makeover show. It's like one of my favorite. But there's this other one on MTV called Pimp My Ride. Anybody seen it? Okay, so you've seen this show. Pimp My Ride is basically about these people who say, okay, the condition of my car is not in very good shape. So I'm going to write in, and hopefully there's like a rapper who hosts this. His name's Exhibit with an X. Exhibit? He's so cool. So Exhibit, if Exhibit shows up at your house, it's like your car is going to be transformed. They take your car, and they take it into the shop, and they form a team around your car that are like experts in like transforming cars that are busted up and broken down. And they exceed the owner's expectations in just amazing ways. And so the owner, you know, they bring them in and they pull the sheet off the deal and they freak out. They just can't believe it's their car. Sometimes it's not even their car. You know, they just buy a new one and then pimp it out. For that, by the way, for that 16% of you that are like over 50, pimping is a good thing, okay? Maybe this is the first time that word has ever been used in church, but hopefully that's okay. pimping is a good thing. It means like enhancing or making better, okay? So we want that, okay? We want to get pimped. So this whole message I kind of did it in a different way with students, and we did this series called Pimp My Life. And that's really what we're talking about this morning is how can God, Paul would have said that if he were like live today, that would have, he would have wrote that. Let's pimp our life into Christ or something like that. That's what Paul would have said. But so if you would humor me enough to allow me to take the parallels of this show and relate them to how I've experienced growth, maybe you'll get something out of that as well. But this show, there's something about it that really runs something, it strikes something very deep inside of me because there's so many parallels to how I've experienced growth. So the first thing that I did to experience growth, to kind of get through this, was just, first of all, just to get real. I had to get real with myself and other people. Every single person that experienced the transformation of their car had to be honest and say, look, maybe my car has some issues. You know, there are no wheels. You know, like the roof is caving in on me. You know, the stereo doesn't work. There's no headlights. There's no, my car has issues. They had to recognize that stuff. In the same way that in my life, like I said, there was nothing indicating that my life was going to fall apart. So I had to say, what's really going on here? And so a couple things that, just for example, that I realized, one thing that I realized is that there's something about my nature that is very impulsive. And when I thought about my work life, I realized that that impulsiveness was spilling over into the decisions that I was making about work. And that a lot of the decisions were impulsive in the way that I was choosing very entrepreneurial, risky business that wasn't very stable. And for me, I had to say, maybe there's something about that that I need to recognize how that affects my life, how that affects my work life, and the decisions that are being made, and that's not going to serve me well. So maybe I need to think about that. I believe God kind of revealed that to me, and friends revealed that to me as well. Another thing I realized, and this is more recent, probably in the past 2 years, I've really realized how much the culture that I grew up in, it wasn't really necessarily a church culture, but it was definitely kind of a Christian culture that I grew up in, had influenced me in such a way that I was formed to really become defensive about my faith, not as engaging with people as I really could have been. Whenever something was pressed in on me or a question was posed about God or about the Bible, I would go into defensive mode. And I had all the answers. I could tell you why the Bible says that I'm right. And let me show it to you. And whenever that was pressed in on anymore, I would just say, well, that's just how it is. And over this period of my life, I think I've become a lot less defensive and understood that the way my culture influenced me maybe really wasn't all that loving, wasn't at all growing into the way Christ would want me to be. A book that I read called A New Kind of Christian, it was talked about the first week in this series, Brian McLaren, I think, wrote that book. I'm not a reader at all. Like, I despise reading. I get everything on like audio cassettes or whatever. I read this book and it really helped me to say, maybe I need to change my perspective and engage people more, because there's a whole lot to learn other than my little perspective that I have. My foundation of some of my beliefs about God haven't really changed, but how I'm able to find freedom in engaging those questions has radically changed in my life just in the past 2 years. And I found that I've grown tremendously in that freedom just to say, I don't know. All of the answers that I used to have, I'm learning more and more as I grow. The answer, more often than not, is I have no idea why God's like that or why that kind of thing happens. So I recognize some of these issues. And it's okay for me to recognize them, but if I don't do anything with them, my car stays the same. So the second thing I did was ask for help. In this show, they take their car and they form a team around this one car. People that do interior work, people that work on the paint, people that do body work, people that do like engineering. The kind of engineering that goes into these cars is amazing. Wheels and tires. This whole team sits around a conference table and thinks about this one car, and they say, what can we do to pimp out this car? And I thought, man, it just makes sense, because my entire life had been spent really doing this kind of thing on my own. What if I enlist people to help understand who I am on the inside and how I'm wired, to help me understand how to grow? Because my whole life, I think about it, and I invite people to oversee my finances. I invite people and I encourage people to help me professionally grow and how to tune certain skills that I have and get better. I even enlist people to help me out with my golf swing, you know? And that's been like a focus for me lately. That's fun. I like that. But I get all kind of help in all these areas of my life, and they're all the things that are temporary. These aren't the things, as John Ortberg was saying, these aren't the things that are eternal. Why is it it's so easy for me to invite all these people to help me out with all these external things, but yet when it comes to the one internal thing that lasts forever, I leave to my own genius? And anybody who knows me would say, okay, that guy's no genius. It's so true. 30 years of my life were essentially lived trying to figure it all out on my own. And it really came down to a pride thing. My whole life, I never had any scars. I never carried what we might call baggage. And so I found a lot of pride in that. I could walk around and say, oh, I've never done that. I never experienced that. And there was pride wrapped up in that. But all of a sudden, I found life had kind of gone south for me. Now I had to say, oh man, I'm divorced. All of the markers that I thought I would hit at age 30 were gone. Now I had to say, I'm divorced. What does that say about me? I don't know if anybody's divorced in here, but I kind of labeled people who were divorced as people who, number one, either are just inherently messed up people, like there's just something wrong with them, or they're people that lack commitment. They didn't have enough guts to stick it out. And so all of a sudden, that's what I had become. The definition of what I never wanted to become. And so now I had to say, oh, maybe I have some scars and I need to lose the pride. And maybe it's time for me, because I have no idea how to fix this, to invite a team around me to invest in me and help me understand myself. The first person. And so the next thing I did was really form a team. And that's what I did. And not to sound cliche, but the first person that I really invited into that team was God. Because if God really did design me, if God created me, then he must know how I am to function at my fullest. To experience life in the richest way, if God designed me, he must know that. And if God is to live inside of me, then it's not just a self-help, I'm going to muster up all the energy and I'm going to try as hard as I can to fix myself. This is another thing that Paul has to say about God living inside of us. This is what he has to say. when God lives and breathes in you, and he does as surely as he did in Jesus, you are delivered from that dead life. With his spirit living in you, your body will be as live as Christ. So don't you see that we don't owe this old do-it-yourself life one red cent? I love that line. We don't owe this old do-it-yourself life one red cent. There's nothing in it for us, nothing at all. The best thing to do is to give it a decent burial and get on with your life. God's spirit beckons. There are things to do and places to go. Paul is saying, take the pride that you have and the do-it-yourself mentality and put it to death. Bury it, because it's not going to get you anywhere. But when you ask a living, breathing God to come into your life, he will breathe life inside of you and begin to reveal things to you and will be the power to help you change. Man, I hope that doesn't sound cliche, because it hasn't been for me. God's revealed things to me that I would never have realized just on my own. The second thing that I did, the other people that I put on my team was what I call my wise counsel. And this was a team of people that consisted of my brother Jim, Jamie, Lionel, good friends from high school. And they, by the way, they all have kind of different perspectives and angles on life. So good friends from high school. John, one of those like six bosses that I had, really brilliant guy, put John on my wise counsel team, and then Dr. T. Because why not get somebody professional? Why not get somebody who really understands people and really understands me? Man, is this a pride thing anymore? I think there's a stigma associated with kind of going to get counseling. It's like, oh, you need counseling? My gosh, what's wrong with them? You know? And for me, it's like, forget it. I need to grow. Why not get somebody who really knows the deal? In Proverbs 27:17, it says, as iron sharpens iron, so one person sharpens another. Man, it's so true. If we allow that, if we allow people to come into our life, if we open ourselves up and say, I want to be sharpened because I want to grow in to be more like Jesus. And so I got these people because they were genuinely interested in my transformation, in my growth. I knew they wouldn't sugarcoat things. I trusted them. They have different perspectives and personalities, and they gave me encouragement along the way. So I go to these people on a regular basis. For example, last week, my fiance and I, Kim, we went to go see Dr. T. And on the way over there, we're both on the phone going, what do you want to talk about? Life's great. I don't know. What do you want to talk about? I don't know. Well, let's talk about maybe, in fact, we're getting married. What's involved in that? Maybe something we're overlooking. And so we went in, and let me tell you about this experience, which was very similar to like sometimes when you take your car in. You think you're just taking it in for an oil change or a tire rotation, and all of a sudden, $2,000? What? It was very much that experience, like my flux capacitor manifold drive's losing a spring? What? We went in there, and all of a sudden, all of this stuff comes out. When you look under my hood, you don't have to go very far to find stuff that needs growth. I mean, that's so true for me. And so I ask these people on a regular basis, what do you see happening in my life? I was in Sarasota, Florida, and a good friend of mine, college roommate, was down there playing golf with him. And we're sitting on the beach in Sarasota, Florida, on this outside patio of this bar, drinking beer, watching the Miami Dolphins play football. Does life get any better than that? I submit that it cannot. And so we're sitting there, and I just opened up my life to Kurt. I said, Kurt, I want to invite you to communicate to me, to tell me what you see happening in my life, because I want to grow. And so I asked him that question. Kurt, what do you see happening in my life? And he looked at me, and he said, first of all, Greg, speaking about my marriage, he said, I'm sorry. I know how much that meant to you, and I'm sorry. And there was something that stirred inside of me. Here I am drinking beer, watching football on the beach in Florida, and I've got tears running down my face. It's the first time somebody really, I opened up my life to say, what do you see going on? And this is not a particularly sensitive guy, Not the kind of guy that you would say is really always in tune with that. But man, he knew me. And he went on to talk about my work life and the decisions that I was making that were going to impact me, my family long term. And he said, I want to see you have more confidence and find that one thing that you can go after and do well. Oh man, what would I do without those conversations of people that I was able to say, I'm an open book. What do you see? And that's simply what I encourage you to do this week. To go to somebody on your wise counsel team and say, I'm going to open up my life and I want you to tell me what you see happening. You'll be amazed what they see. When was the last time you sat around a table and spoke about a friend or somebody that you know and talked about all the ways that their life needs to change? All of the things that you see going wrong, all the decisions that they're making that aren't right. How often do we talk about that about friends? What makes you think that when you're not there, what would happen if you actually invited that stuff? Say, what do you see happening in my life? Don't keep it. Don't keep it from me. Help me grow. Help me to grow. And I encourage you to do that this week, but please don't do this. Don't even consider doing this if you're not willing to totally just not be defensive and fire back, because they're not asking you, okay? They're not asking you, and that's okay. Because we want to grow to be more like Jesus. I want to invite Todd out and ask Todd to sing that song for us again. This whole idea of change my heart, God. And this whole idea of make me more like you. Help me become more like Jesus. And I want to ask you just to not sing. I just want you to sit and listen and talk to God and say, God, the first person I'm going to open up my life to and say, speak truth to me. Help me understand myself better. Help me to understand what needs to grow. Let's do that with God right now. Just ask God, God, what do you see happening in my life? God, I pray that you would mold and make us until the day we meet you. God, growth isn't limited to any age. And I know that I've got a lifetime of growth coming my way. God, thank you for that. Thank you that you're the power for growth. God, thank you that when I spend time with you, you reveal things and you help me to change. God, I pray for each person in here that they would find some wise counsel that can walk with them and give them encouragement to help them also reveal things and encourage them to grow. God, I pray for each person that's here that showed up this morning that doesn't have those people, that you would connect them with people here to help walk with them, to become more like you. Help us to become more like your son. We pray all this in his name. Amen. Thanks for coming this morning. Go and grow.